America leads the world in medicine development. It matters. We get new medicines first, nearly 3 years faster. 5 million Americans go to work because we make medicines here at home. And not relying on other countries keeps us safe. But China is racing to overtake us. Will we let them, or will we choose to stay ahead? When America leads, America cures. Let's tell Washington to keep us in the lead.
Learn how at americacures.com. Paid for by Pharma.
All right, everyone, we are back. Happy New Year. You can still say it on January 5th. That's when we were recording this. It's Inside Boxing Live. It's Dan Canobio. It's Chris Algieri. And we're presented, as always, by PPV.com. First episode of the year, Chris. We already had one big fight in the books. Amanda Serrano, unanimous decision over Reina Tellez in San Juan. I was on the call. It was a great time. And I'm happy to be back with my guy, Chris Algieri.
I'm happy to be back as well. I'm one of those guys that gets pretty antsy during the holiday season, just not doing enough stuff. Although I did chill out this time because I had a really intense year. So I think I chilled more than usual. But even that, I'm still raring to get back. So it's good. This is like day one. Everything started. Yeah. Back at Pro Box. We're back here. Back to work. Let's have a great year.
Yes, we are going to have a great year, and we are locked and loaded in with PPV.com. We're upped with our proud presenting sponsor. We thank them, as always. Going to have a lot of cool stuff in store, heading to fights, doing this podcast. There it is, doing the podcast twice a week. And, yeah, I got a little fuzzy during the holidays trying to figure out the schedule, and we got our award show in there, and then now we're back to normal programming twice a week and all that. But, had one fight in the books. Amanda Serrano gets a unanimous decision win over Reina Tellez. I thought she might be able to get the stoppage, considering Tellez took the fight on 2 weeks' notice, 22 years old, never fought three-minute rounds. Had a really good amateur career at Team USA Boxing, but it was a lot from Serrano. She threw over 950 punches, relentless. Tried to go for the knockout, too, in the 10th, which I find pretty admirable. But the Serrano train moves on. She's 37 years old. She says she still wants to fight. Puerto Rico crowd was lit. I had a blast being on the island, and Serrano wins.
Yeah, Serrano wins. Wasn't super impressive. I think the storyline is Tellez. Like, she can fight, and she got the opportunity. She showed up. She didn't make weight, but she did show up on short notice and went out there and fought her heart out. And I'm going to say it again. I don't think the three-minute rounds is good for Amanda Serrano in general. I think with the way that she's orchestrated her entire career, she comes out, she sprints, she goes super hard, she has real power, she's a damaging puncher, but she gets that 1 minute to rest, that 50% of the go time to rest and come back and sprint again. And I think a lot of women can't recover the way that she does, so I don't know if the 3 minutes is good for her. She's not stopping these girls like she used to. That could be age too. But I don't blame her for wanting to keep fighting. I mean, the money's there right now. She's a star. And there's a ton of opportunities out there and some big fights down the line.
Well, I don't know if she wants those big fights, because the bigger fights are at 130, 135, and she's very adamant about staying at 126.
Good for her. Undefeated here. She's been all over the board in terms of weight, and I think she's had to really push herself beyond her physical limits in order to get the big fights. But she did that, and now she can hang out where she belongs, which I think is 26. It should be under 30 at least.
Yeah, but she's going to have to just welcome new names there. It's going to be the Amanda Serrano show, which I'm sure she's fine with, and her entire team. Tierra Brown just upsets Skye Nicholson. That could be a fight at 126. Nina Meinke, she already beat. There's Bumgarner out there. There's some other names. There's Caroline Dubois at 135. I don't know if Serrano wants to go near that. But she did tell me during the week when we did our little interview that she wants to eclipse Christy Martin's knockout record, which is 31. She's one behind, so she needs two more. And she was really going for it in that 10th and final round, where she had the fight in the bag, Serrano, but she wanted to go for the knockout. She came forward. She got hit a lot in the fight. Her eye pretty much closed up around round four. But it was cool. It was cool to be in San Juan for New Year's. It was cool to be on the island. They love boxing. Met a few of our listeners, which always is pretty damn cool. This one guy came prepared with he had a notepad out, and he's like, "Hey Dan, can I ask you a few questions?" He goes, "What is it like to be on the Goofy train?" And I started laughing. Then he goes, "Question number two." He's like, did you feel like there were enough big meaty men throwing heat tonight?
Wow, that's a hardened listener, yeah. Man. That's great.
And his last one was, do you think this will be a big year for the fucking mugger, Benavidez? And I was
he hit all the funny aspects of the cast, man. That was good.
Shout out to that guy. Shout out to San Juan, Puerto Rico. Shout out to got a nice little tan. I can't really see it anymore. It's gone.
I was gonna say where did you leave that there?
New Year's Day. I went in the ocean.
Did you have to check it at customs?
New Year's Day. I was pretty hungover. Not gonna lie. I had a lot of drinks, and I'm old. And I'm laying on the beach, just licking my wounds. And Nikisa from president of MVP walks by and goes, "Hey man, let's go. We're going in the water." Next thing you know, I'm just barreling waves, getting knocked over. Refreshing though. Help that really wakes you up and it eliminates the hangover.
Nikisa knows what's up. He sees a guy, he's struggling, he's hungover. Dude, you got to get in that salt water. Salt water, a little bit of vitamin D therapy, a little salt water therapy can really bring you back. Listen, I'm a Floridian and we all know I like to drink, but hangovers cure is the ocean. It's part of what God has given us, the having to live near water. So,
oh, it's amazing. San Juan is such a cool place. I hope you head back there. Also on the card, Holly Holm got upset as the challenger. Stephanie Hahn was the champion, but she was also the underdog heading into that fight. It ended short because of cuts, but Hahn was way up on the cards. I know they wanted to do Holly Holm versus Katie Taylor. That was something the MVP was looking to plan. I think Hahn and Holm are going to run it back because it did end early, even though I do think it was not going to go in Holly's favor at all. I had her winning maybe one round out of the – I think they got to the seventh. I had her down big. Holly's, 44 and a lot of mileage, and Hahn is pretty good.
Holly was the favorite going into that fight. I wasn't sure of the betting line. Wow, that's surprising.
Slight.
Hahn can fight. Hahn's not young either. She's 35 years old. She doesn't have the wear and tear that Holly Holm has. But Holm showed that she's been out of the boxing ring legitimately for a very long time. Her footwork was all over the place. She was very, very tall. She couldn't get her head offline. Hahn's entire strategy was create a little bit of distance, step back, throw the right hand. Couldn't miss at all. Was landing big, hard, clean shots. I'm telling you right now, if Holm wasn't as big and durable as you, because she's humongous for that weight class. If she wasn't as big as she is and as durable as she is from years of MMA training and kickboxing, she probably would have got stopped because she was getting cracked with super clean punches. Hahn couldn't miss. Not that Han's a big puncher, but when you're countering that well and timing someone the way that she was, you usually see people getting hurt and getting stopped. If they do fight again, I don't know what kind of adjustments Holly can make because the footwork
faint isn't more,
there.
Faint more footworks. Get out of the way of the right hand. Find the fountain of youth. I don't know.
Turn back the hands of time.
Turn back the hands of time.
Stay out of that cage. Get back in the boxing gym. I mean, Holm looked good in that one fight that she had, but against obviously very low cop. Opposition.
Yolanda Vega, she fought.
Yeah, and she looked great in that fight. She moved, she fired, she's big, she's strong, but fighting world class, these girls are good now. It's not like it was, 15 years ago when she was boxing.
Yeah, it was just too much. Hahn was too much, and I like Hahn a lot. I like Hahn Bumgarner at 135. Hahn Bumgarner at 135 would be I think Alicia's got to move up. Alicia's got to move up. Doesn't have to, but I think we're looking for big fights to make at MVP, and that's one of them. 13 fights. I was on the air for 9 hours straight. Christina Poncher, first time working with her. We had two shout-outs. Two Chris Algieri shout-outs on the broadcast.
Well, I mean, you had two of my favorite people working with you. So you got CP, you got Christina Poncher, and you got Nonito Donaire. Those are my guys.
And Claudia.
Oh, and Claudia, of course. I forgot about Claudia. She's with you guys as well.
Yeah, Claudia Trejos.
Claudia and Nonito are my cigar smoking pals. Whenever we're in the same spot, we're always Nonito's comes with the sticks, and we get to smoking and talking and laughing our heads off.
I absolutely love Nonito Donaire. He is literally the best human ever. Like, not even just like my favorite boxing person, right? Like, not even my favorite boxing person, just my favorite, one of my favorite people. Like, we just chat, yeah. And we almost got stuck in San Juan because of this situation in Venezuela or whatever's happened there. And I woke up in the morning to an email saying, like, you're due to international travel restrictions. I'm like, what?
What?
And they open up Twitter and Venezuela's trending. Their president's in handcuffs. And I didn't realize how close we were to Venezuela in San Juan.
Yeah,
it's
dude,
200 miles away.
Yeah, you could swim that, dude. Little.
I thought we were gonna have to swim home.
You could get there. Yeah, due to presidents getting kidnapped, you cannot fly today.
I got out. Serrano was on my flight back to New York, Team Serrano. We got out. There's a few MVP people still there, which isn't the worst thing. I mean, they're all at the beach right now. And it's
I'm
about
surprised Serrano didn't
here.
Hang out more and kind of chill with her people. That's
She had an after party for the first time in her career at the El
first
San Juan.
First time?
Wow. Yeah. Club Brava, which is the best club, I think, in San Juan, or at least there's probably some better ones I don't know about, but this one is in the El San Juan Hotel.
I don't think she's never been known as a partier by any. No. She lives like a Spartan lifestyle, so that doesn't surprise me.
Lives like a monk. She lives that Beterbiev lifestyle, that Hopkins lifestyle.
Well, that's why she's 37 and one of the most prolific female champions ever.
37 throwing 950 punches. Listen, she might be a little past it. She has one stoppage in her last 11 fights. But I said this on the broadcast. She still can hang with anyone and beat anyone at 126, even maybe 130. She's still one of the most ferocious female fighters ever and one of the best watch. Just a good watch. Like, you just watch her. Just comes forward, throws hands, you know, gets hit, not afraid to get hit. And it's a great watch. And to have it in Puerto Rico as well is just like the icing on top of the cake.
This version of Amanda Serrano, which, and again, I'm not knocking her. It's not her best version. You know, no one's best version is at 37. But she's, like you said, she's a great watch because she's a warrior. And that was something she always had. She just didn't need to because girls couldn't stand with her at all. Couldn't stand in front of her because she was just destroying girls and mowing them down. Now, it's not like the lights out power like she used to have in such a way that you don't see women who punch like Amanda has and does, but now they're able to survive. So the fights are more interesting. These women are able to stand in front of her and bang with her, and she's willing to do it because she is a warrior. So yeah, absolutely a great watch is Amanda Serrano. Even though she's not, you know, the Amanda Serrano of old.
It is now January. We have one fight card in the books, and usually January in years past has been somewhat of a slow time.
Usually,
as of the last couple of years with all the streaming services and all the content that's out there, it's kind of ramped up. But this is one of the more busy January, so I'll do a little January boxing preview. This weekend in New York City, in Brooklyn, yep. Subrio Matias versus Dalton Smith at 140 pounds. Matias clear to fight. He is under the threshold for Osterine, and that's a big discussion point here. I know, Chris, I don't know if you see this, but some Puerto Rican fans were a little upset with you. Some of your statements that you made in previous podcasts about Matias, we have not addressed it, so the floor is yours.
Well, Osterine is a zero threshold drug. It's not supposed to be in your system. So until you prove why it's in your system, I have questions. And the fact that, you know, he's still under suspension, or not a suspension, but he's under, like, what do they call it?
They slapped him on the wrist.
Yes, yeah, it was a slap on the wrist. The fight is allowed to happen. And listen, they were the main event of a card. Listen, it's a good fight. Like, I really like the fight.
This
it's
is
a
an
really
awesome
good fight.
Fight.
It's a really awesome fight. And that card is built around that awesome fight. And it's a big, heavy Puerto Rican card. You need that Puerto Rican fight in the main event. So if that fight had fallen through, the whole card falls through. So all these things kind of line up. And you're like, oh, slap on the wrist. The WBC is actually who cleared him. But not an agency that does drug testing. If you go by the drug testing, by VADA, by WADA, if you have Osterine in your system, it is a zero threshold drug. Meaning, if it's in your system, you messed up. And if you're going to have to, and if you're going to show that it was an accidental, you have to prove where the accident came from. So getting cleared in 3 days for me just doesn't add up. It doesn't compute. So it makes there be a lot of questions. And then that on top of, you know, obviously the history that Matias has, it makes you really look under microscope and be like, come on, man, you got to be a little more careful. Guess what, guys? You know how you don't fail drug tests? You don't take pets. You don't, you have a nutritionist looks at your supplements. I have been tested by absolutely everyone. I've done VADA, I've done WADA, I've done USADA in all of my big fights. Over my entire career, I've actually been tested out of contest as well, randomly, because I was on the random VADA testing pool for a long time. Never came up with anything. Never had an adverse finding. So if you are a real professional and you're a world champion and you're taking care of what's around you and who's around you, which you have to do because everything that goes into your body is entirely up to the athlete themselves, then these kind of things shouldn't happen. So I have a lot of questions when it comes to these kind of things, and it's just very curious. But listen, apparently that's in the past. Now the fight is happening. Let's talk about the fight.
Yeah, absolutely. We did have to address it, and I'm glad we did. It's Matias putting his 140-pound WBC title on the line. Dalton Smith, who is coming over to the States for the first time, is all action. This is going to be a straight-up shootout. I mean, both guys come forward. Both guys like to go for knockouts. It's on PPV.com, which is interesting. So go ahead and order with PPV.com this Saturday at the Barclays Center. And we got, who else we have on this card? We have Nestor Bravo. I've called some of his fights. He's an Orlando native from PR. We have Alfredo Santiago versus Henry Cedeño. I feel like I've called some of Cedeño's fights too. You say something?
No. Nope.
Okay.
Keep going with the card because I want to.
Yes. Yeah. You're pulling up right now. Yeah, and you got Keith Colon versus Alberto Guerva. But 140 is a really interesting division. Obviously, you have Matias, you have Gary Antoine Russell, you have Shakur Stevenson versus Teofimo Lopez, which is at the end of the month. You know, Matias is always going to be in the discussion because he might not be a ticket seller, he might not be the biggest personality, but he is known in the boxing circles, and he could, as a champion with those other champions, he's a name. And he makes for good fights. So if he wins this fight, which we'll break down in greater length on the episode later in the week, he's going to be in big fights, whether it's a fight with Puelo, whether it's fights with Russell, whether it's the winner of Teofimo and Shakur. It's a loaded division, and it's a good fight. I think Smith, too, he's probably the underdog, but I would have to pull up DraftKings. It's probably pretty close to pick 'em fight.
Yeah, it's probably pretty close. I think, you know, a couple years ago, everyone went with Matias in this fight, rightfully so, because Dalton Smith hadn't had really the level of competition or the experience yet. And he still might not. And that's really the question of this fight. Like, because Matias is 32, I didn't realize that, or 32 or 33. So, like, you know, he's kind of approaching that age where guys tend to fall off. So it's like, all right, is Dalton Smith the real deal? Can he get past... the older two-time world champion, is the timing right? Or is it not? And if it's not, then Matias wins this fight. And I think I lean towards Matias in this fight. I like the experience. I like a guy who throws nearly 100 punches around. I like the fact that he can punch. And you mentioned he's not the most popular guy in terms of personality and profile, but he's very well known in the sport because he's exciting. You got right. A guy, like I said, who throws a ton of punches and scores a lot of knockouts and is willing to exchange and get into firefights. Yeah, there's always a place for a guy like that. And Dalton Smith, who I know they're kind of pushing him to be like the next it guy. This is a stiff challenge. And it's really going to come down to, is he ready for the type of pressure that Matias is going to put him? We're going to have to find out on that night, because like you said, I would imagine it's kind of like a pick 'em type, probably lean towards Matias on the betting line, which I would as well, but it's a good fight. And I want to real quick, a shout out to Keith Colon, who spars with my nephew regularly. Excellent, excellent young fighter, super, super talented, really good pro style. Good card. I mean, and it's at the Barclays, man. What's better than that? And it's on PPV.com.
And it's on PPV.com. And Matias minus 160, Dalton Smith plus 125. So it is pretty damn close.
Pretty damn close. Boxing leaning towards Matias. Yeah, that's Smith makes sense.
18-0, 13 knockouts, has never faced any. It was a big time step up. He beat a faded Jose Cepeda. This was supposed to
stopped
be like
him with a body shot, though. It's, you know, beating him is one thing. Punch. How you beat him is important. He's a physically strong kid. You look at him; he's an athlete. He's an athletic guy.
Yeah, that's this weekend. Another fight this weekend. One of the more interesting heavyweights in boxing, Ajit Kabayel, steps back into the ring against Damian Caniba. I'm not going to pretend like I know a lot about Damian, but okay. Well, that's why we're the best duo in boxing podcasting. Tell us about Damian. Am I even saying it right? Kibia. K-Y-N-B-A.
I think it's Caniba. Very tall. Very, very tall. Fights tall. Very good at fighting tall. Good amateur background. Polish fighter. He's one of those guys. He's a little similar to, stylistically, like a Klitschko, who's going to use his jab and his length all day long. You get close to me, I'm going to grab you, spin you. Yeah, he's huge. And he drops the right hand when it's time. And he uses it really, really smartly. So not the super busy guy, especially with power punches, but he lets that jab fly, man. really knows how to fight tall. And he's got a little bit of pop. He's a big guy. He can fight. He can fight. But Ajit Kabayel is a beast. I really like Ajit. First of all, I love his name.
Everyone loves him.
He's got the coolest name in the sport. Both his first name and his last name are awesome. Ajit Kabayel. I don't know. I hope if I'm saying that right.
No, I thought he had a nickname. But he doesn't.
He doesn't. He doesn't need one. His name, he's got such a cool name. But this is an interesting fight. Ajit Kabayel is definitely way more physical, but can he deal with that height and reach? And a guy who knows how to use his height and reach.
Yeah, it's everyone's looks at Kabayel. He's like the sexy pick. He's like the hipster pick. It's like, oh, yeah, you think Wardley's good? Well, have you seen Kabayel fight? Or, well, you think this heavyweight's good? How come no one ever talks about Ajit Kabayel? Well, we're going to have to start talking about him this year because something we'll get to in this episode is Tyson Fury is coming back. I don't know what's going to go on with Joshua. Wardley is a name at heavyweight. Usyk is tied up with Deontay Wilder. So a guy like Ajit Kabayel could be on the outside looking in, or he could find himself fighting Tyson Fury, could find himself fighting for titles if Usyk, who knows what goes on with Usyk. So yeah, this is a big thing for Kabayel, and he's fighting this weekend, and the fight is in, I want to say it's in Germany, or yes, it is in
which
Germany.
Which is where Kabayel is from, no?
Is it Germany? I'm horrible with these flags. That's the German flag. Black, orange, red, yellow.
Yes, that's Germany. And Kabayel is from Germany. And you know,
I want to see how many tickets is he going to sell? Because the one thing that I criticized Kabayel for was when a lot of people were chirping me like, oh, this guy, Kabayel deserves it more than Wardley. Kabayel deserves a shot at, what's his name? Joe Parker. More. He deserves a shot at this. And my retort was always like, this is a business, guys. Like, what's Caballero's profile? Can he sell tickets? I think from what I've heard, he is selling tickets. So that's why I want to see that. I would love to be wrong there because this guy's awesome.
Well, German fans are awesome. That's why the Klitschko's, we're you know, the European fans are great. German fans, especially if you've got a guy that is your countryman, like you can really get behind him. His ability to sell outside of Germany comes into question for sure. But I guarantee you he kills it, you know, for this fight. You got a German versus a Pole. This is a nice European matchup.
You say he's a Pole because he's 6'7"?
No, because he's Polish.
Yes. He's ranked number 2 heavyweight by Ring Magazine. Number 1, Wardley, Kabayel, Daniel Dubois, 3. I don't know about that. Hergovic, 4. Zhang, Bacoli, Atuma, 7. Atalma,
well, Zhang was the best win on Kabayel's record. It comes into question, was Zhang just past it? Was it just that
Sanchez
time
to too? Overtake? Sanchez had the bum knee.
Yeah, but Sanchez has had the bum knee. He gave Makhmudov his first loss, but it's turned out Makhmudov wasn't that good to begin with. Like he had a sterling record. Yeah. But he did destroy him and he did stop all those guys. So you got to give him that. Again, you know, you bring up like, oh, great, we fought him when he was this, but he's still, you know, he still got it done in the fashion that he did.
A win is a win is a win in the heavyweight division.
Win is a win is a win. And a body punching heavyweight, sign me up, dude. Sign me up.
Exactly. Just win in advance and figure it out from there. So I will be watching that. We'll be watching Matias. That's this weekend. Moses Atalma is coming back against Jermaine Franklin. So two of the dark horse heavyweights, two of the heavyweights that are not part of the older class, even though Kabayel is in his early 30s. Atalma is 21. Taking on Jermaine Franklin. Atalma is saying that this is the toughest fight of his career. Franklin is brought in to present a style, present a different type of look, present rounds. Will it go rounds? I don't know. We'll see how good Atalma is. He should be able to handle Franklin. Franklin is crafty, though.
So our Puerto Rican homeboy who you met and remembered all of the taglines that we had throughout the year that were funny, go back and check. And I said, who should Atalma fight next? And I said, Franklin. And yeah, now we got right. Franklin. I said that because I think it poses a really good test and a legitimate threat, by the way, because Franklin throws a lot of punches. Not a big puncher. Throws a lot of punches. Is very, very active. Has a good gas tank for a heavyweight. Is also super durable. Can take a shot. So what happens when Atalma hits a guy and the guy takes it? What happens when we're late in a fight and the guy is throwing 60, 70 punches around the way Franklin does and is able to punch with you? This is a legitimate test. Listen, if Atalma goes out there and blasts him out, which is always possible because one, it's heavyweight, and two, it's Helm is very explosive. Okay, cool. We have a little bit of an answer. But if it goes late, does Itama have the goods? Does he have what did they used to say? What's that British term? Does he have the
it's cut from the same hem sheet?
It's a, this is an old term. I'm going back to like my like the movie Snatch. Does he have the metal or whatever? I don't know.
The fortitude, the balls. That's American. It's
something very specific to
something
to,
very British.
British, something very British. It'll come to me. But anyway, so what happens if the fight does go rounds? What happens if he has a guy who's throwing that many punches?
I hope it does.
I hope so too, because I want to see more of Itama. And you know, I want Itama to win. You know, no knock on Franklin. You know, this kid could be the next thing. But I want to see more of him instead of blasting guys out and around.
Right, because there is a lot of hype around Itama, and it's a double-edged sword at this point in his career, where he's not moving like we saw like a Mike Tyson moved, who he's been constantly compared to, where he'll fight 10, 12 times in a year. They're moving him very, very carefully. They're moving him as if he is close to contending for a title, which he is. He's ranked very highly. He turned down an eliminator. An IBF eliminator with Frank Sanchez, and his reasoning was because he didn't want to ruin any of his other very high rankings with the WBC, WBO, WBA. I think it showed that you can do that. If you would have lost an IBF eliminator, it does not affect your other rankings. But like, he's up to the point now, Itama, where he's not a prospect anymore. This dude's full-blown contender. And as badly as I want to see more rounds from him, like, he has to look good in there as well. But I would like to see rounds. I would like to be able to really figure him out and just see him pressed, or, you know, see him lose a round. And how does he bounce back from any bit of adversity? Can Franklin do that? I don't know. We'll see. I know he's very motivated, had some personal issues, some deaths in the family and all that, but you know, I'll be locked in because I think Itama is probably top three most interesting fighters of 2026 because of what he can do.
The boxing world is going to be locked in because you mentioned the hype around this kid. The talent is there, obviously. The profile potential is there. That's the key word. But you know, you mentioned a key term, adversity, and you know, they were talking about Itama fighting Usyk. Come on. Like, no, we're not jumping the line. We're not forcing this guy. We haven't seen him go through any adversity yet. Franklin could be that guy. And in fact, I wouldn't be surprised if he was. And we want to see how he's going to handle that. Because when it comes down to it, champion material, with the difference between a champion and, you know, a contender, like a front runner type guy, is being able to deal with adversity, being able to make adjustments on the fly. And we haven't seen Itama have to do that yet. So maybe this is that match. Maybe it's not. But I think I like the way they're moving him stepwise. And I think this is a good step.
Yeah, this is January 24th. Moving on this month, Raymond Murataya versus Andy Cruz. Vacant nice title fight. At 135. Really nice fight. Not the biggest promotion because neither guy is really known. Cruz is known as a Cuban-style fighter that won multiple Olympic titles and beat what's his name? Keyshawn Davis. Keyshawn Davis couldn't figure him out. He's one of the trickiest style in all of boxing. And Raymond Murataya is probably the most slept on lightweight in the world. So this is like a fight between two guys that don't get any credit for how good they are. Once again, we'll be locked in. US at home should be locked in too. It's on the zone. This is, I believe, the 24th as well. There's a lot of fights on the same dates in January, but we got Raymond Murataya and Andy Cruz. A vacant lightweight title.
Lightweight division's heating up, man. And the guys are fighting each other. So this is a really good matchup, a very dangerous matchup for both these guys early in their careers. Although Murataya is not that early in his career. Listen, Robert Garcia is someone I collaborate with all the time, you know, with Pro Box, and we talk to him. Murataya wants all the smoke. He wants to fight absolutely everybody, anybody in those divisions. They're ready. And he's one of those guys where I was afraid he was
31.
Yeah, I was afraid he was going to get stale because he was chomping at the bit for a long time. It was like probably 2 years ago saw him fight, and I was like, yikes, this guy can fight. He needs a title shot, and he's finally getting it now, but he's getting it against Andy Cruz. That guy is a puzzle to figure out.
28 years old, sorry. Yeah.
Who's 28?
Murataya.
Okay. All right, good.
But he's up there, but he's he's now going to start getting big fights.
That's absolutely your prime. 28 is your physical prime. I think, you know, for boxing,
In terms of him getting shots now, like you said, like it took a little bit to get to this fight now. So from here on out, he should be getting big time fights. And that's probably good that it's aligning with his physical prime.
Win, lose, or draw, he should be getting big fights every fight from now on. Andy Cruz, though, man, I am so impressed with him. So impressed with
the odds
on
this one.
What I've been seeing from him lately as he's transitioning into the pro ranks and really figuring out his pro style, he's a problem.
He really is. He's a -225 favorite right now, according to DraftKings. That's -2000.
A little more sizable than I'm comfortable with, but I get it.
Yeah, this is like a real hardcore fan's delight here in 135.
Yeah, delight.
135 could be interesting if Shakur goes back down. Shakur leaves. Well,
two of the champions are guys that are not competing. Really, you know, like Shakur is fighting his next fight at 140, and I don't know if he's going to want to come back down, if that's even going to be an option. And then the other one is Tank, and we don't know. We have no idea when Tank is going to come back to the ring.
Man, I've heard a lot of things about Tank, and none of them are good. Let's move on. January 31st is your big boxing day. We have fights all over the globe. We have fights all over multiple divisions, or a lot at 154. Xander Zayas takes on Abbas Barao. Zayas defending his title at 154. Barao, that's unification. Barao upset Yoenis Teyes. I was on that call for that fight. Zayas had his win, the vacant title win, at 154 earlier this year. I liked his fight a lot. Zayas is going to be the favorite, and he should win if he is able to master his footwork, which is the calling card for Xander Zayas, because Barao is going to cut that ring off. Barao's going to eat shots. He's going to come forward. He's very durable. There's going to be moments in this fight where Barao's going to have Zayas cornered, to have him up against the ropes, and it's going to be up to Zayas to use that masterful footwork that we've seen from him. Great fight. I don't know what network it's on, because it's a top-ranked fight, but is it on Tubi? I don't know. I don't even ask anymore, but it's a good fight, 154.
I'm going to make a very bold statement here.
Say it.
Barao is tailor-made for Xander Zayas.
I started to think that, too.
And if Xander is what he appears to be, from a stylistic standpoint, he dominates Barao. Barao is that style matchup, which is very similar to, you know, how I fought against a guy like Ruslan. I was always able to beat, if you're a tough guy, plotter, puncher, without like super fast feet, it's easy work for a tall, long combination puncher with a good gas tank. That's what Xander Zayas is. Yeah. If he has the metal to deal with pressure, easy fight. The only way he loses this fight, if he breaks under the pressure of Barao and the punching power. That's the only way. Otherwise, I think it's an easy fight for Xander.
Yeah. That's what I think. Zayas should be in control. He's a -360 favorite. But I just love what I saw from Barao. I loved what I saw from Barao in the fight with Teyes. Teyes is not Xander Zayas. Teyes does not move like Zayas. He's a plotter. He comes
big
forward
as Zayas. Zayas is humongous, dude.
Yeah, I love this fight. It's in Puerto Rico too, so that could add that in for Zayas. He that could add to a little bit of the pressure. I do think there will be moments for Barao. I just don't think there will be enough. Love that fight. That's the 31st. Also the 31st. Bakram.
Real quick though, I wasn't knocking Barao.
No, not at all, bro.
I think it's just a stylistic matchup.
Shout out to him for taking this fight. He beat Teyes. He could have just sat back and waited for names to come to him. He's got a title now. They're going. And same thing, shout out to Zayas too, who famously pulled out of those negotiations with Virgil and said, "You got to fight me in San Juan. I have something that you want." And then he turns around and fights Barao in unification while Virgil is still waiting for his first title shot, still waiting for his first title. So, yeah, both guys. Shout out to both guys, Zayas and Barao, for running into the smoke, running into each other. Also, this night, I forgot where it is. Could be in the UK. Bakram is back. First fight since beating Zhu, defending his 154-pound title against Josh Kelly. This was like a purse bid situation. No one wants to fight Bakram. He also has the IBF title, which is the 10-pound rehydration clause, which no one wants to do. But Josh Kelly is stepping up to the plate here. And I'm excited to see Bakram because this guy just no one wants to fight him.
Very excited to see Bakram. He's a guy that we need to be busy because the guy's the goods and he's the dark horse of the 154-pound division and people don't want to fight him. Also, Josh Kelly presents a specific style, right? He's athletic. He moves. He boxes. He's got good defense. He moves his head. He's a slippery guy. So seeing how Bakram can deal with that kind of guy when you've got so many talented different styles in the weight class, I think is important. That being said, I think that Bakram is just a different level of fighter.
Beast.
At this point.
Absolute beast.
Absolutely.
It's in Newcastle.
Literally, he might be able to beat everybody at 54. That's the level that I'm talking about for Mirza Hazliyev. I'm not saying he would. I'm saying he could be that kind of guy. And I don't know if Josh Kelly has shown in the past, in recent form, if he can deal with a guy at that level. But I'm here to watch it. I'm definitely going to be tuned in.
Yeah, Erickson Lubin turned down the title fight with Bakram to fight Virgil for more money. He made more money, but he lost. Bakram, I wouldn't say he's like top three most important fighters this year, but like this is a best division in boxing. Someone asked me that. I did a Q&A on Twitter. One of the questions was, what's the best division in boxing? And I said 154. And this could be the best fighter at 154. So if you're the best fighter in the best division in boxing, you're interesting. And if you can do it the way that Bakram does, is a freaking 5'11 and a half, 74-inch reach, throwing bombs. It just no one wants to fight him. So I hope he wins or whatever. If he wins, he wins. And then fights some of these other champions, whether it's Zayas, whether it's Barao, who's the other champ 154? My mind is...
Fandor.
Right. Fandor is supposed to be fighting Thurman. They were going to revive that fight.
Fandor is another super fun...
Fandor versus Bakram.
Oof.
Give me that fight.
Fandor versus Bakram. Fandor versus Virgil. Virgil versus Bakram.
Boots.
Boots versus all of them, any of them.
I love this weight class.
This weight class is super deep. Talent laten division.
Is there somewhere? I always find myself missing talent laden. Madrimov, Zayas, Ennis, Brandon Adams, Barao, Boachuk. What a division. What a murderer's row. And then the crown jewel of the boxing schedule for January, Madison Square Garden, Shakur Stevenson, Teofimo Lopez, ring belts on the line. Shakur looking to become a four-division world champion. Teofimo looking to his best win, I think. I think it would be a better win than Lomachenko. Argue me all you want. Good undercard, too. That was announced. Keyshawn Davis, Jermaine Ortiz, Bruce Carrington, Carlos Castro, Adames, Carlos versus Ammo Williams. But Shakur Teo, we're going to get into overdrive with this fight because I feel like the promotion, it's a weird fight to have in late January because you start promoting around the Christmas time and everything gets swallowed up. But I expect that to go into overdrive in the next couple of weeks. And at least I hope so because it's a big fight.
Regardless, we're going to help push it. We're going to talk about it a lot here. So everybody's going to be hearing about it a ton. Awesome fight. Great fight. And it's we're seeing more and more of these young guys taking the risk to fight each other in early on when they're in their primes. I think that's going to be the story of 26 and moving forward. I think the undefeated records thing is over. That era, that Floyd Mayweather hangover is over. Now let's get the best fights. Let's have guys fight each other. Let's have guys take the risk. And let's be okay with fighters having losses. How about that? Guys can have losses and still be at the top of the game. Why not? So this is a really important fight, I think, for the health of the sport. You have gone on record several times saying it's not going to be the best fight or, burning, raging fight, whatever. I think it's going to be an awesome fight because of the level. And it's one of those fights you're just like on the edge of your seat because it's so tight. Are they going to throw a million punches? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. But yeah. I think the level is going to be so high, it's going to overshadow that they're not that busy.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think it's going to be – I mean, you don't have to – you follow the sport, and you know it's not going to be like some type of shootout. But it's very important. I did say that numerous times. This is a very important fight. Shakur wins. I think he belongs in the top 5 to 7 in pound for pound. Teofimo wins. He's on the pound for pound list. Many argue that he should already be on it. It's a throwback type of fight. Like, these are the types of things like you watch in like the early 2000s. Like you see like Shane Mosley jump up to 147 to fight – an Oscar De La Hoya, or you see two of the top guys in a weight class fight each other. I agree. Yes, this fight is so meaningful.
Tito. De La Hoya and Trinidad.
I was just watching the legendary nights on that.
Oh, such a good one. Such a good one.
De La Hoya, what was he thinking running those last couple of rounds?
There's an alternate universe in quantum theory that De La Hoya won that fight. That De La Hoya fought one more round and he won that fight.
And dude, I'll never forget, he had the punch stats in his hands and he's walking through the back room and he has them in his hands. Face has got glitter all over it from the celebration.
Yes. Yeah.
And he's got, I landed 100 more fucking punches!
If you watch the rounds where he was really on, like the rounds he was winning, he
first
was
seven rounds.
Phenomenal. Phenomenal. The footwork, the hand speed, the jab.
Who told him the coast? Who was his trainer? I can't even keep track of who his trainer was at that time because he's changed trainers so many times.
I think it was Gil Clancy was one of them in there. It also was...
Gil Clancy, wow.
Yeah. De La Hoya, but De La Hoya... So that was the first time we ever saw De La Hoya's gas tank be a problem, and it became a problem for the rest of his career after that, if you remember. He would always kind of fade late, and that was the first time we ever saw that. So maybe no one told him. Maybe his body told him that you need to...
Was that 2000?
That was 2000, Fight of the Millennia.
Yeah, because I remember... Yeah, wasn't, but could have been. I remember...
That's why they had the glitter.
Yeah, it was so funny. Hype was insane. That was like a huge fight. I remember having a party in the basement. My dad was there. And I remember going to Trinidad's fight after he beat De La Hoya in San Juan. It was his hometown fight. And being in the El San Juan Hotel and understanding how big Trinidad was. Like when he won that fight, superstar. And that comeback fight, I was loud Saturday night for Serrano. I will never forget how loud it was when Trinidad made his ring walk for his first fight back after beating De La Hoya. I was like 12. And
that's crazy.
Yeah, I know. I got some poisoning too.
I've said that. I'm not surprised. I've said this multiple times. Trinidad is like one of my favorite fighters all time, but yeah. I hated him. I hated him when he was like fighting because he beat all my favorite fighters. He beat all my guys. But like in hindsight, looking back, I'm like, that guy is so good. Like everything that was about him, so he was a marathon runner. He was tall. He had a left hook from hell. He had a great jab. He had a decent right hand. And he would finish strong. So that marathon thing, would always get brought up on the HBO telecast. Like, oh, he's a marathon runner between fights. You know, he's got great gas tank. And he always did. He'd always finish fights so strong. The opposite of De La Hoya. And he would get dropped early, similar to kind of De La Hoya. They both used to get dropped early. I think that was just because they were tall guys who cut a ton of weight to make 47. But the way that Trinidad finished fights and the fact that he was always looking to knock you out it just makes me look at him. How do you not like that guy? Like Trinidad?
He's one of the greats, man. And he's missed today because that style and just that charisma.
And he's a different, so the Puerto Rican fighters have a kind of a specific style, but there's an island version and there's a New Yorkan version or a Northeast version. They're very different. You know, the New York version or the Northeast version is a lot slicker. And the island version is super offensive minded and aggressive and really, really good technique in terms of the hand position. If you watch a lot of like Cotto and Trinidad, who are Puerto Rican island fighters, they always had the other hand up with the left hook. You know, boom, they had it really tight to the face. You know, whenever you see pictures of Cotto ripping to the body, which he did all the time, elbow was pinned, right hand was in perfect position, the hand position was great. Not like the Camacho, which the hand position, you know, hands were flying and moving. Different style of fighter, both Puerto Rican, obviously, but there's difference kind of the north and the south, the island and the northeast.
I tell you, the MVP card I just worked, there was 13 fights. There were 10 or 9 prelims, and the majority of them were all Puerto Rico versus Puerto Rico.
Killer fights.
They were fun, but you just don't see that. It's just really hard. I mean, he's a reason why Trinidad's an all-time great because you just don't see that anymore. They were fun fights, but I didn't walk away saying any of these guys are going to be generationals.
Well, I say with you don't see a lot of combination punchers anymore because guys are such good good counter punchers these days. Bro. And that style, like Trinidad was a combination puncher. Yes, he was a power puncher, but he would let his hands fly and was willing to because the hand position is in a great place. So if you're trying to counter, when your fundamentals are there, the way that Cotto and Trinidad were, you can mix it up the way they did.
Well, it's not just a Puerto Rican thing. Like I would say you and I call probably the most prospect level or just below superstar level type of fights, whether it's pro box, whether I'm doing prospects with MVP. And I even did a Box Labs event this month, and I was just like, where are the combination punchers? It's all 35 to 40 around. A guy's sitting down their shots, a lot of feints and not a lot of jabbing. And then when you see, like, that's when I was just like taken back when Serrano finally got into the ring in the main event, and she's thrown 950 punches. It's just like
Chris Algieri numbers there, man.
1,000 Chris Algieri numbers. Well, that's what Jordan Maldonado said in the airport the next day. He was like, "I love Chris Algieri because he threw punches."
I love them too. I love Jordan too. Those guys are great. And yeah, I say it all the time. Like I mentioned that guys don't throw combinations like they used to, and I was a combination.
I don't see it anymore.
And I know it's super dangerous. I lived it. It's a very dangerous fighting style, but it's fun.
It's super fun, and it can really separate yourself. It's a lot. There's not a lot. Keyshawn Davis returns. This was announced last week. He's fighting Jermaine Ortiz. Pretty good fight at 140. Davis is going up to 140. He's back. He arguably had one of the worst years last year of any fighter. A missing weight. All the stuff that happened in the arena with his brother. It was just a really bad night for, I would say, one of the brightest stars, heading into 2025, in the first half of 2025. A guy that I thought could maybe fight Tank, a guy that could take over because it's such a good, big personality, whether you like him or not. He's back, though. He's fighting at 140. I like this fight. Jermaine Ortiz is limited, but has been in there with a lot of good names and presents a pretty difficult style for any type of fighter. We're going to see what Keyshawn's all about. I think there'll be a lot of eyeballs on him. He's the co-main event for a big card.
When you say limited, what do you mean about Jermaine Ortiz?
Like, he's not, like, once again, he's not a combination puncher. He's not a power puncher. He's a very, very solid fighter, very solid boxer. Like, he'll present a tricky style to Keyshawn that Keyshawn should be able to figure out.
So Jermaine Ortiz is all around solid. Solid. He's solid in every way. Like you said, he's not a home run hitter. He's not a sprinter. He's not a long distance. He's a good middle distance guy. He's good at absolutely everything. Got a great gas tank. He's big for the weight class. Even at 140, I think he's going to be the bigger man in the ring. Physically strong, but not the strongest guy. Decent puncher, but not the best puncher. Right. But he's very crafty and he's very smart. My issue with him is, I believe, and we've seen this in some fights, strategically, I think he makes some wrong decisions in fights. Because otherwise, I think he can beat the best guys in the world. He could beat a guy like Teofimo Lopez. He almost did. You know,
he could beat a guy like Lomachenko.
He was very much in that fight. And if he had made some different decisions in either one of those fights, he could have won both. And I think he's extremely talented. I think this is a huge opportunity for him. It's a tall task, but Keyshawn Davis has been inactive. Keyshawn Davis is a guy that has had some mental issues in the past, you know, dealing with some mental psychological demons himself. If you are looking for an underdog to bet on, maybe you bank on the fact that Keyshawn has been inactive. Maybe Keyshawn's head's not right. Maybe Jermaine Ortiz has a chance. I mean, that's just something you could do if you were trying to talk yourself into taking this bet, because I'm sure the line is going to be pretty strong for Keyshawn, right?
They don't have it yet. But yeah, I expect Keyshawn to be 3-1, 4-1.
Sizable. Sizable.
4-1, probably. I don't have it yet on DraftKings, at least.
3-5, 5-1, which is pretty sizable. But yeah, it's his first time at 140. You know, Jermaine Ortiz hasn't been super active, but he's fought high level. So, I'm not even going to argue it. He has had better competition than Keyshawn.
I mean, does it get better than that?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty impressive. So I don't know. It's a good fight, like you said. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, good card. We're gonna try to put together something.
Yes,
it's a pregame party. I'm gonna have to call the establishment, see who's willing to show up.
The establishment.
Get a little partay going. January is a good month, man. This is solid fights. I mean, you got a little bit of everything. You got your phenom in Atama. You got your dark horse heavyweight in the Caballero. You have potential fight of the year in Matias and Dalton Smith. You got Zayas Barral. You got Bakram. You got Tio and Shakur. I mean, this is a solid month. I mean, I'm pretty excited because usually January sucks.
Yes. It's historically been a slow part of the, slow part of the year. But listen, we're in a whole new era. We don't have HBO anymore. We don't have Showtime anymore. But we have streaming platforms. We have Turki Alalshikh, who loves the sport of boxing and wants to have boxing year round and make it a big deal. So we have a different landscape now. So we're seeing fights like summer used to be slow, not anymore. January used to be slow, not anymore. And we were saying that last show about December. Like December used to be super slow, but we have Japan. And we have Inoue, so we're Jeez. Getting fights year round. It's an awesome time to be alive.
I'm tired. No, I'm not. I love this. I'm recharged.
You are. You're allowed to be tired, Dan. You're allowed to be tired.
I'm using January. No travel in January. I'm going to get back into the lab, back into the gym. I'm going to start hitting the mitts. I'm going to go to Long Island MMA with our friend Ryan LaFleur. He doesn't know this, but yeah, I'm going to go train with him. Nonito said he'd train. I think I'm thinking about doing a little like content series. You know, like I'll come down to Florida with you, hit the mitts.
Well, we got
to
get back something in the gym.
From you. Back in the gym.
I want to get the meta glasses and we can do stuff with that.
Got it. That's a must.
I think that'd be a cool little session. Get you.
Yeah, I made some goals for the year, and that's one of them is to get out and do more content outside of the studio, like interactive stuff, whether it's us traveling, vlogs, doing some boxing stuff. Nonito said he's down to hit the mitts, show me some stuff on the road. Like, I'm around the greatest fighters and trainers. Like, I got to start using it and start picking up some stuff. Like, Bob Santos said he would would train me. So, like, yeah, that's something I want to do. Before we say goodbye, Tyson Fury is returning to boxing in 2026, made his grand announcement. It was one of the worst rumors going because we knew he'd come back. What's your level of interest in Tyson Fury's return to boxing in 2026?
Very. I love Tyson Fury. I'm a big Tyson Fury fan. I think he brings an incredible amount of energy to the sport, a lot of eyes to the sport. He's a larger-than-life character. He's a larger-than-life human. He's gigantic. Have you been around Tyson?
He's big, bro. Okay, wait a second. Bro. The video of him that he posted hitting I thought it was his dad.
he's big and not the best way. But I called his fight, who is the German that he fought?
Schwartz,
yes. We had that crazy when he did sliding, rolling, boom. So I
used
I called that
forever. Top Rank used that clip.
Yes.
Oh, God.
I called that fight for Top Rank. It was in Las Vegas. And I remember him walking into the fighter meeting, and he had the duck to go under the door frame. And I was like, what the hell is that? He's 6'9", people. 6'9". He is a gigantic human. And then on top of that, his personality is even bigger. He completely dominated the room. Like, he has like an aura to him that just like it pushes you back.
Yeah, he's like legit heavyweight champion of the world. Like, for sure. He's
larger
than
life.
Larger than life, but I just feel like some fans are just tired of the Tyson Fury experience. I welcome him. I welcome him in. This is probably going to be one of his last years in the sport, whether you like it or not. He's 37. Obviously, they were gearing towards a fight with Anthony Joshua, but we don't know if Anthony Joshua will ever return back to the ring.
Yeah.
Car accident that killed two of his best friends. He was on top of the world after the Jake Paul fight. I was in the club with him, next table over, watching a guy just beaming, his entire team happy, talking to all the fans. Joshua taking time to take pictures, talk to fans, and give them a little bit of time, and just look like a guy that was taking it all in, and just shows you how things can change so quickly in life. He goes to Nigeria. You've seen all the clips by now. You know all the stories. We haven't been able to talk about it here, but it's just unreal, man. It's just life is crazy like that. And I know it's not the type of tension that a Joshua wants, but just like in terms of like the human experience to go from, he was probably one of the most searched athletes of 2025 heading into that final fight with Jake Paul. And now there is another interest in him now because you want to see how a human reacts to such a thing. So it's a very fascinating time for Anthony Joshua. I know it sucks for him right now, but in terms of fans or people just interested in Joshua, the story, I mean, it's crazy to see what he'll do in next year.
Fascinating is not the word that comes to mind, but heart-wrenching for sure. I mean,
just the whole experience.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in terms of how life comes at you fast, man, because like you said, going from where he was to where he is now, you know, we send our thoughts and prayers to the family of his friends that he, you know, referred to as brothers, to Anthony Joshua himself. Could we have we had an update on his physical form? How
he's fine. Like, I mean, he's walking around. There's a video of him at the funeral yesterday. There was a lot of misinformation coming out of this stuff. Like, you know, I was around a lot of MVP people last week who were really close with Joshua's team from working together, and there was a lot of misinformation. Like, I saw something, maybe he broke his leg. That's not true. Like, there's internal bleeding. Not true. I think he's fine. Like, physically, he's fine. Like, the mental is the part. Like,
yeah, the mental, psychological.
There's two ways to look at it. There's two ways to look at it, I think. He can either come back and fight for his brothers and fight for his two friends that he lost, or he could pack it up and just say, you know what, I just don't have it in me. And I think either way, if he packs up and never fights again, I think everyone can understand that. Yep. If he fights for his friends, I think we can understand that. It's just, that's what I mean about the fascinating part. Is like, yes, none of us really know him personally. I've had my run-ins with him, and he's a very, very nice guy and very down to earth. Just what he does from here on out, I believe, is going to be very interesting.
I mean, it's a shame for a ton of reasons. Obviously, for the loss of life and people that are really close to him, but it's also a shame because, you know, he finally made his successful debut in America, and he was welcomed with a loving embrace. People loved him. I've heard from so many people how great he is. I've had my friends who were girls have all reached out, be like, Anthony Joshua, huh? I'm like, where have you been?
TikTok? I know you're not a TikTok guy, but like, you open up TikTok the week of the fight and the week after, he was everywhere.
Yeah, rightfully so. He looks, this is my famous line. If I'm making a heavyweight champion of the world in a video game, it's Anthony Joshua. The guy has everything. The looks, the ability, the power. And the guy's charisma. 250 with abs, and he smiles. Like, he's got everything. He actually, when he got his haircut down here in Florida, he went to my barber. So I got to hear firsthand about how nice of a guy he is. And his team, and they're gentlemen, and they just are very, very, very mature. They know how to act. And it's refreshing. You know, the way a champion is supposed to be. And, you know, the way that now America has gotten introduced to him because of the situation, it makes it really unfortunate, because if he doesn't fight again, which he doesn't have to, I agree with you, Dan, 100%. If he chooses not to fight, I get it. Totally get it. It would be a shame because of what his profile is over here now. And I think that's something that was important to him, was to be, you know, because you told me he was asking a lot of questions about, like, you know, America or he talked a lot. He knows a lot about American culture, and his favorite fighters are from here historically. So it really would be a shame if he wasn't able to capitalize on his newfound, you know, persona here in the States. Because I did an interview with Declan Warrington, who's a writer over in the UK. And, you know, it was before the fight, and he's asking me, he was like, you know, he's like, I've talked to some Americans about Anthony Joshua, and they kind of agree with Jake Paul that he's kind of chinny, he's robotic, he's this and that. Is that the way that you feel? And I was like, absolutely not. No, I think he's a super athlete who can punch, and a heavyweight, no one has a chin, because all it takes is one shot. And he's a two-time gold medalist and a fantastic fighter and all that. And going, you know, I'm a big Anthony Joshua fan, and have been for a long time. But the American fans weren't used to it. The American fans were the guy who got knocked out by the fat Mexican guy.
Right. Yeah.
You know, that's how the American fans took him. The Americans fans were looking at, you know, Anthony Joshua the way that Jake Paul was describing him. Oh, he's you know, he's a Frankenstein. He's slow feet. He loses to smaller guys. He doesn't have a chin anymore. He's shot. But now everyone sees, like, nope, this guy is legit. So again, I it would be a shame if we don't get to see him again here in the States, because he has so much positive fanfare now.
Yeah, I think Eddie Hearn was very smart in doing whatever they could to make the fight with Jake, because they knew what they had in Joshua in terms of how marketable he is. And that was the knock on him overseas to some, is that besides him being chinny, whatever, when he's not, he's a heavyweight fighter. And when you're going to, every heavyweight fighter in the history of time has been dropped. But they, you know, one knock on Joshua overseas is that he's too much of a marketable. Like, he thinks about that more than his career.
Well, he's a business.
Right. But that's fine here. Like, that's fine. Like, he was introduced to a whole new group of fans for the first time here, and with flying colors. If he fights Fury, it's not going to be here in the States, but there is talk that it could potentially be on Netflix. And you're telling me that coming off of knocking out Jake Paul, that on Anthony Joshua's on Netflix, like, his profile couldn't be any higher. And just on a personal note, like, when he did come into the room when we do our the mini mic interviews for MVP and what I was doing that week. And, you know, the two guys that did pass away were in the room. And those were the main guys. When me and Joshua were doing our jokes and we're laughing, doing our New York slang and talking about Sopranos, those are the two guys he just kept locking eyes with and laughed. Those are his two homeboys all week long. Great guys. And another thing, too, I did with Joshua was asking about investments, which I like to ask fighters about. What would financial advice? He says, I don't do any get-rich schemes. I don't do any crazy advertisements. He goes, I literally just invest in real estate. And my team told me from day one, he has the best team. Like, there's a reason why he's been able to stay at the top for so long. And I think these two guys, their past were a big part of keeping him grounded. Just unfortunate, man. It's just crazy. Like, it's life is wild. How one week you're on top, next week you're at a funeral home, burying two of your best friends. That's the fast. I know the fascinating, probably not the best word, but like, it is. You look at the. It's just a human experience. It's crazy. Like, I'm very curious to see what he does. I hope he fights Fury. Maybe it's the second half of the year, because they're talking about putting Joshua in there. In February, I don't think that's going to happen. A lot of us were upset with the fact that they were talking about doing a, get back fights for each guy.
Comeback fight, yeah.
So maybe, Fury did mention Wardley's name, fighting for the WBO title. Fury Wardley would be pretty badass.
That's
like, who could Fury fight if it's not Joshua?
That's not a tune-up fight. Wardley's a problem for literally everyone in the sport.
That would be the big one. If Joshua decides not to fight again.
Yeah.
And now Fury's looking for what's the big one that's going to motivate me.
That would be gangbusters. I love that matchup. If the Joshua fight can't materialize, Fury and Wardley, love it. I love it. It makes so much sense in so many different ways. It's the old lion and the new lion coming up and that's a timing thing. Does Tyson have one more epic night in him? Or are we going to see the changing of the guard where Wardley dethrones the former king and is now a major player?
That's pretty cool. Yeah, Joshua was supposed to fight Rico, what's his name?
Van Herven.
Yeah, maybe Fury takes that one.
World kickboxing champion.
Yeah, that's like the Turkey special right there. Turkey wants that.
So he's like the Muhammad Ali of heavyweight kickboxing. He's the GOAT. He's been the heavyweight champion forever. He's so damn good. Comes from behind, gets his eyes shut, gets dropped multiple times, comes back to win kind of guy. He is the Rocky version for kickboxing. So
yeah, we'll see. Heavyweight should be interesting, because this past year was not the best year for heavyweights. 2025. Time the heavyweight title got defended with Usyk. Wardley fight with Parker was probably one of the top 10 fights of the year, but it ended up being a vacant one when Parker got tested positive and Usyk gave up a belt. So if Fury comes back, if Joshua decides to fight again, if Itama keeps getting better, Caballero ups his profile, and then the usual suspects all fill in, like Frank Sanchez gets healthier, Zhang, probably forgetting some here, but it could be the year of the heavyweight again. I think it's very important.
We had a good year a couple years ago. We had a couple good heavyweight years in a row.
The champion of the world only fights once, yeah. Alexander Usyk.
Yeah.
And Usyk's fighting Wilder, bro. That's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know. I'm going to get some heat for this. I don't mind it.
It's whatever. There's no one left for Usyk to fight.
There's no one left for him. He's closing a circle. And listen, he's
here in the States,
which is also great. We need to get to that. That's going to be in Vegas, yeah? I would assume.
I heard some things. I don't know yet. Could be a bunch of spots. L.A. or Vegas?
Hopefully not L.A. because of taxes, but either way. I know, but I want these guys to take home as much money as possible. But we should go either way, wherever it is.
Oh, for sure. They're looking for a promoter. They're looking for someone to help promote that event.
All right, let's do it. You and I, we'll go to IBL.
Inside Boxing Live Promotions.
That'll be our first show. Our first show will be Usyk and
with
Wilder.
A bang, baby, with a bang. That is the end of our show. We will be back later in the week to preview more in depth any news and notes. Should be a fun year. Happy to get back in the saddle. January is going to be great, and we keep things rolling here at Inside Boxing Live. Any final words, Chris?
I like we did it back in the saddle, because you just came from San Antonio and you got the whole kit now. So
that was this month, right? San Antonio, Orlando, Miami, San Juan. Uh-huh. That's disgusting, but it's also great.
That is great. That is great. One fight we did miss is we have a Pro Box show the same weekend as Teofimo Lopez and Xander Zayas.
That's in D.C., right?
It's in D.C.
Take the train to New York right after.
I actually am. I got my dad's birthday is that week before. So we're going to do a little family. You should come out. I was going to say, you should come out to Long Island, but you are on Long Island.
That's where I am right now, baby. I'm not moving for a month.
A Long Islander.
Not moving for a month. I am not leaving this island for a month, unless something good comes along.
Well, you got to come. You got to come over to Comac, go to my cousin's restaurant. I'm in. Get some good Italian food.
I'm down for that.
Some real traditional Italian food.
Well, I'm in. All right, everyone. Have a good week. We'll see you later on in the week. Protect yourself at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs.
Monster Energy. Everybody knows White Monster, Zero Ultra. That's the OG. It kicked off this whole zero sugar energy drink thing. But Ultra is a whole lineup now. You've got Strawberry Dreams, Blue Hawaiian, Sunrise, and Vice Guava. And they all bring the Monster Energy punch. So if you've been living in the white can, branch out. Ultra's got a flavor for every vibe. And every single one is zero sugar. Tap the banner to learn more.